Donald Trump is on trial in New York over misrepresentation of hush money payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels, a story I'm sure we're acquainted with to some extent. One recent poll found that 31% of Americans find Trump's behaviour unethical, but not illegal. Another 14% think he's got nothing to answer for. 35% say his actions were illegal. So that also reminds us of the divide in the US over who will win the upcoming presidential election. It looks very tight. Trump seems ahead in the so-called swing states that will determine the outcome. But on the other hand, Biden's closing the gap nationally. It's a very narrow gap. One man who has an impeccable track record, really, of picking the winning presidents is Alan Lichtman, a distinguished professor of history at American University in Washington and the author of books like The Keys to the White House and The 13 Keys to the Presidency. He's managed to get it right in every election since 1984, so 40 years worth of correct predictions. And there have been tight races, as when George Bush defeated Al Gore. And that's the one election Alan Lichtman got wrong and right, in that he forecast Al Gore would win the popular vote, which was correct. But Gore didn't win the presidency. Arguably, he may have done if the votes in Florida had been counted differently. Alan's 13 keys criteria take into account the economic state of the US, large events affecting voting, and other aspects we'll delve into. You have to be able to turn enough keys to unlock the door to the White House. Professor Alan Lichtman, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello.
You knew that Donald Trump would beat Hillary Clinton in 2016, and he sent you a congratulatory note. What did it say?
He did. And by the way, at the same time, I made my prediction of a Trump impeachment before he was even elected. But he didn't acknowledge that. The note said, "Congrats, Professor. Good call." And in big Sharpie letters, "Donald J. Trump."
Is that on your wall?
It is, right back behind me.
But then you used your famous 13 keys to predict that Biden would beat Trump. And I guess what are you thinking this time around? First of all, can I ask?
Yeah, well, I haven't made a final prediction yet, based on my 13 keys. But I have said that, number one, all this talk about replacing Biden is misguided. That's a sure path for defeat for the Democrats. Let me explain. One of my keys is incumbency. Biden wins that. Another key is internal party contest for the White House party. Biden obviously wins that. That's two keys off the top. That means of my remaining 11 keys under my system, six more keys would have to fall to predict Biden's defeat. Biden doesn't run. They lose the incumbency key. They lose the contest key because there's no heir apparent. That's two keys down off the top. That means only four more keys would have to fall to predict the Democrats' defeat. I did say that a lot of things would have to go wrong to predict a Biden defeat.
Yes. When Biden beat Trump, there was a big voter turnout, wasn't there? This year, pollsters are reporting considerable apathy. Does that have a bearing on things? What's your view on how interested people will be come November in this contest between two men who would both be octogenarians in office, Alan?
Number one, I pay no attention to the polls, particularly polls many months out before the election. They have no predictive value and are often entirely wrong. So my system is entirely independent of the polls. Nor do I try to parcel out segments of the electorate. That is another way to make errors. You cannot figure out who is going to win by piecing together the electorate, looking at things like turnout or swing states or demographic groups. That never works. It has no scientific value whatsoever, so I stick to the keys. Unless something turns a key, it doesn't affect my predictions.
Interesting, and we'll get to the keys almost right away, but a lot of pundits, commentators are fixated on those swing states, which they think Trump has an advantage in, so it's interesting you say that.
Right. You know, he might have an advantage now. A week from now, he might not any longer have an advantage. The polls are all over the map. And as I said, early polls are entirely misleading. In 1988, George H.W. Bush in May, and we're not even in May yet, was 17 points behind his opponent, the Democratic governor, Michael Dukakis of Massachusetts. And every pundit had written off H.W. Bush. And I wrote in the Washingtonian magazine in May of 1988, not only is Bush going to win, but he's going to win in a show-in, in a shoe-in, because forget about the polls. He's running on the Reagan record of peace, prosperity, and domestic tranquility. And of course, Bush went on to win quite handily. And, eventually all the latecomer pollsters came around to my point of view.
And Bush the elder was also ahead of Clinton early in the poll and the polling in the next election, wasn't he?
That's right. And a lot of people are predicting again H.W. Bush's win. And I predicted a Clinton win. And again, he won pretty handily. Or in 2012, the polls were showing Romney was going to win. And a lot of pundits jumped on that bandwagon. But as early as 2010, I had predicted an Obama re-election because I couldn't see six keys falling against him. And then out of the blue, I got a 30-page attack on my prediction from this guy, Nate Silver, a compiler of polls. And he said, "You can't predict the election this early." And I said, "You can't because you rely on polls. I can because my keys probe the underlying structure of how elections really work." And I didn't shed too many tears recently when he was bounced out of the election prediction business, bounced out of 538.
It's interesting. To what extent, just before we get into the keys, because they're fascinating, to what extent do you think any country can formulate a set of keys and apply it to their elections?
I'm asked this all the time, and my answer is the methodology absolutely can apply to any country with a relatively stable political system like that of the US. But you can't just take the keys and export them to another country. You've got to
No.
use the methodology based on the politics and history of each individual country. I'll tell you a quick story. Many years ago, I got a call from a very nice woman who said, "We want you to come to our group and talk about applying the keys to other countries." I said, "Fine. Where is your group?" She said, "Langley, Virginia." It was the CIA. And I went to the CIA, gave them a lecture, and for all I know, there are CIA Lichtman models all over the world. Never heard from them again, of course.
That's a good story. So there are 13 keys, 13 statements, and if we answer false to six of them, Trump will win. Yes, true answers favor Biden's re-election. False answers favor Trump. Yeah?
You're exactly right.
Okay. So after the midterm elections, the incumbent party holds more seats in the US House of Representatives than it did after the previous midterm elections. That's false for a start, isn't it?
False.
Yeah. The candidate is nominated on the first ballot and wins at least two-thirds of the delegate votes. True.
True.
And the sitting president is the party candidate, as you've said. True.
True.
Okay, a third party candidate wins at least 5% of the popular vote. Shall we say true? I mean, RFK Jr. is easily above 5% right now.
I'd say undecided. We really can't call that key right yet till we see if his polling stabilizes at more than 10% or less than 10%. My intuition is he's not going to consistently poll when we get closer at 10% or more.
Okay. So that's up in the air. There isn't a recession in the US. That's a moot point. Shall we say true, though?
It's true. I mean, there always can be a recession, but right now there isn't one.
The long-term economy, it's argued that the economy's done better under Biden, despite people's impressions. So we have true again.
True. It's based on long-term real per capita GDP, and the Biden record's way ahead of the record of the previous two terms. So that one's true.
The next key, the Biden administration has achieved a major policy change during the term, comparable with the New Deal or the first term Reagan revolution. But has it?
That's absolutely true. I mean, the difference between the Trump administration and the Biden administration is stark. Within his first 24 hours, Biden set a record for executive orders, overturning Trump's executive orders on immigration and on the environment. He rejoined the Paris Accords that Trump had withdrawn the U.S. from. And he's had more policy accomplishments domestically than any president since Lyndon Johnson, the stimulus bill, the infrastructure bill, the tax and climate change bill, a whole host of major policies, which of course go directly counter to the policies of the previous administration.
That's correct, but are they perceived as such? I mean, you talk about the New Deal. We've all heard about that from the 1930s. The Reagan Revolution, we know that to a certain extent. Do Americans perceive that Biden has done all this, the voters?
They certainly perceive that Biden has made major policy change. Certainly, what Biden has done is of the magnitude of the Reagan Revolution.
Okay. There's been no social unrest during the present term that's comparable with the upheavals of the post-Civil War Reconstruction or of the 1960s, and has sustained or raises deep concerns about the unravelling of society. Many people would say false to that, Alan, and that the US is unravelling socially, of course.
Well, again, that's just an impression. You've got to go by what is actually going on in terms of social unrest. And for a long time, I thought that key was pretty secure for Biden, but we've now seen all of these campus protests. They haven't risen yet to the level of society unraveling, but I'm keeping a close eye on that key.
There is no broad recognition of a scandal that directly touches upon the president. That's arguable, isn't it? I mean, the Republicans do
Not
want.
even close. Republicans have been trying for years to pin a scandal on Biden, and they've come up absolutely empty. Even that drive to impeach Biden has completely faded away.
But according to CNN, most Americans think that yes, Joe was involved with Hunter's business dealings. That doesn't elevate itself
No,
to.
it's got to be real. It can't be just one party mongering fabricated ideas.
Foreign or military failure, there's no major failure during the term comparable with Pearl Harbor or the Iran hostage crisis, undermining America's national interests or threatening its standing in the world. How about the withdrawal from Afghanistan and the opposition to Biden's position on Israel right now?
I don't think the withdrawal from Afghanistan threatens American national security. It was bad optics, but overall, except for the one suicide bomber, it was pretty successful. But obviously, there is potential failure both in the Middle East and in Ukraine. Again, we have to see how that plays out, but that key certainly right now is leaning against, but I haven't called it.
Foreign or military success, there's a major success during the term, comparable with the winning of World War II or the Camp David Accords, that significantly advances America's national interest or its standing in the world. That's false, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. I haven't called it. Arguably, one can say that Biden achieved a major success by preventing Putin from conquering Ukraine and then moving on to the rest of Europe. And it was the Republicans recently who've been holding up aid. The aid is now flowing. So we'll see what happens with the so-called spring offensive in Ukraine.
Incumbent charisma, the incumbent party candidate is a national hero, comparable to Ulysses Grant or Dwight Eisenhower, or is an inspirational candidate, comparable with Franklin Roosevelt or Ronald Reagan. That's false, though.
That's clearly false. As I said, he's a vanilla candidate, which is why they haven't been able to put a scandal on him, but that's also why he loses the charisma key.
And challenger charisma. The challenger party candidate is not a national hero and is not an inspirational candidate comparable to Franklin Roosevelt or Ronald Reagan. True, but not in the eyes of diehard Trump supporters, of course.
Well, again, when you read the book, you'll see it's got to be broad charismatic appeal. It can't just be appeal to a narrow base. There were lots of Ronald Reagan Democrats. Ronald Reagan won two landslide elections. Donald Trump lost the popular vote in two elections combined by 10 million votes. So his appeal to the narrow base does not turn that key against the Democrats.
All right. So some of this is debatable or yet to be determined. But Trump,
A lot of it is yet to, a lot of it is yet to be determined, which is why I haven't made a call yet.
he may have five or six keys going in his favor, possibly, Trump.
That's not how the system works. It's not keys in favor of Trump. The thesis behind the keys is that American elections are votes up or down on the strength and performance of the White House party. So the real question is, will six or more keys fall against the White House party, not whether they favor Trump? In fact, it doesn't even matter whether it would have been Trump or some other candidate.
If the Biden economy has been more successful than Trump's, and this is puzzling, why do 52% of voters, this is a Brookings Institution poll, I know you're not a great fan of polls, but why do
I
50,
do not.
but why do 50, why would a lot of voters then feel worse off? You know, Clinton is supposed to have said once upon a time, it's the economy, stupid. That must be a big factor.
Well, it's not the economy, stupid. You know, we have fixated on that, and it's just plain false. The economy is important. It's two of my keys, but it's not the only thing. If it was just the economy, the Democrats should have won in a landslide in 1968 when they lost, because the 1960s economy was one of the best economies we've ever had. Hillary Clinton should have easily won in 2016 because the economy was doing very well, but other factors counted against her. So again, you can't just go with one factor. That is a recipe for making errors.
Professor Alan Lichtman is with us. The big unknown, or one of them, is what voters will think come November over all the legal hurdles facing Trump. I mean, they clearly don't care that much, apparently, over the supposed falsifying of business records over the money paid to actress Stormy Daniels. But there's a lot still to come that Trump has still to face. That's a big factor, too, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm not psychic Jean Dixon. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not Mike Johnson, the speaker who claims, you know, the Almighty speaks to him. The keys are based on history. They're very robust. Retrospectively, they go all the way back to the horse and buggy days of politics. 1860, the election of Abe Lincoln, when women didn't vote, most black people didn't vote. My ancestors from Eastern Europe weren't even here yet. It was an agricultural economy. You know, none of the technological advances of the 20th and 21st century. And going forward, it goes from 1984 to 2020, but it's based on history. And it's always possible that an event outside the scope of the keys can be so cataclysmic as to affect an election. We have never before seen, and the media has this all wrong. They say, we've never before seen a former president facing felony charges. Well, that's only half true. We've also never seen a major party candidate of any kind, whether sitting president or not, facing serious felony charges. And if Trump is convicted, that could be one of those kind of precedent-breaking factors that could operate outside the scope of the keys. History can change.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court, I know it's early days with their deliberations too, but seems to be nudging towards a position that presidents need legal protection for decisions with an eye to those decisions being necessary if controversial and disputed, which may let Trump shield underneath that umbrella. I mean, that's just speculation, but that would impart, if true, and if the issues were sent back to lower courts, that might clear the decks a bit for him towards the
Yeah,
election.
I don't think the Supreme Court's going to grant blanket immunity, but I think your second point is very salient. And it looks like the conservatives on the Supreme Court are going to play right into Donald Trump's tactic of delay, delay, delay. They've already tremendously slow-walked this case. And it does seem like they are quite likely to send it back to the lower courts, which is overwhelmingly likely to delay any trial until after the election. And that's a tragedy. The American people have a right to know before the election whether or not Donald Trump is guilty.
So it's too early for the Keys at the moment. When will it firm up, or is that an unknowable question?
Well, in 2020, I made my call in early August, so I would expect to make the call then, but you never know. Events are so fluid. Things are so complex right now with two wars raging, you know, these protests, an uncertain economy. I presume Keys will fall into place by then, but I can't absolutely guarantee it.
What a state, I know we're going back to one of the Keys and with this question, but what a state the 50 states seem to be in. People talk a lot about the schisming of American society. Has it been this bad since the time of the Civil War? I mean, I know you had unrest in the 1960s, etc. But has it ever been this bad, do you think?
Well, yes. You had similar polarization after the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932. Republicans had controlled everything. They had won the last three presidential elections in a landslide. They controlled the Congress. They controlled most states. And so Roosevelt's election was a cataclysmic event, and it sharply polarized American politics. Conservatives called Franklin Roosevelt a dictator, a communist, a socialist. One very moderate Republican said it late in the 1930s, that we are witnessing the kind of polarization we haven't seen since the Civil War, much like what you hear today.
Yeah, it's interesting because history's bathed Franklin Roosevelt in a golden glow, so those of us who aren't historians tend to forget that, or if we ever knew.
That's correct.
Very good. Well, my last question is really whether, at a personal level, the choices on offer dismay you in terms of two men who are both obviously, have obvious deficiencies of a completely different nature and are both very old or will be during the term of whoever wins the election. People from outside America look at this and think, how has the American political system come to this? Is that a fair question?
Not really. You know, back in the 1980s, people were saying Ronald Reagan is too old. He shouldn't run again in 1984. That was much like today. If Ronald Reagan didn't run again, Republicans would lose a slew of Keys and lose the election. In fact, I was invited to the White House after I made my 1982 prediction of Ronald Reagan's reelection by his political director, Lee Atwater. Spent the whole day there. And at the end of the day, he asked me, looks me in the eye and said, what would happen if Ronald Reagan didn't run again? And I said, I predicted his win. Of course, I only saw three Keys down. Without the Gipper, forget it. You know, George Bush is about as charismatic as a New Jersey shopping center on Sunday morning. So you go from three Keys down to a sure win to six Keys down and a sure loss. Lee Atwater looks me in the eye and says, thank you so much, Professor Lichtman. You know, throughout the world, we've had leaders, very successful leaders, as old as these candidates are older. You know, my favorite example is Konrad Adenauer, you know, the very esteemed chancellor of Germany who ran Germany well into his 80s. So age by itself is not necessarily a disqualifying characteristic, although, you know, it is a matter of some concern. And as I said, you know, on the Democratic side, the notion that Biden should be replaced by someone younger is a sure recipe for defeat. Besides, who would it be?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. But people are worried that he'll die in office, and then what happens?
Well, then the vice president becomes president.
But then Kamala Harris would take over, she's not that popular with the country, I understand.
That changes. You know, once you become president, everything is different. And again, you know, you can chain yourself to these polls. Go ahead, and you'll make all the same mistakes the pundits made in 1988, 2012, 2016. Harry Truman was not very popular either, but he went on to become a near great president and won re-election in his own right in 1948. So, again, you cannot chain yourself to polls, which are momentary snapshots with no predictive value into the future.
It's going to be so interesting to see what you come up with come August or whenever you decide to publish your keys this time.
Thank you. And, you know, I do this every 4 years. And I have to say, I get real nervous because, unlike the pollsters, I tell you who's going to win and who's going to lose. You know, Nate Silver, you know, this now bounced but once esteemed compiler of polls, said in 2016, well, you know, there's an 80% chance Hillary Clinton's going to win. Then she loses. And he says, see, I told you there was a 20% chance she would lose. So we can never be right. We can never be wrong. But I go out on a limb every 4 years. And I have to say, you know, I've been doing this for over 40 years, and it makes me a little nervous.
He was the golden boy of polling for a while, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Not anymore.
Very good to talk with you. Thank you for giving us your time as well.
Take care. Thank you.